The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
This episode is brought to you by my friend Rebecca Walser, a financial expert who can help you protect your wealth. Book your free call with her team by going to friendofdinesh.com. That's friendofdinesh.com. Coming up, the Twitter goons, Yoel Roth, Vijay Aghade, James Baker, all up before the House GOP. I'll talk about them in the hot seat. I'll review Julie Kelly's latest reporting on the missing January 6th files. I'll tell you how Biden plans to let pension funds invest your money, not to make money for you, but to put money in the pockets of the climate change industry. And what's up? What's going on with Project Veritas? This is the Dinesh D'Souza Show.
America needs this voice. The times are crazy. In a time of confusion, division, and lies, we need a brave voice of reason, understanding, and truth. This is the Dinesh D'Souza Podcast.
Yesterday, we were treated, and that's the right word, it was a treat. The Twitter goons were talking about the old censorship regime at Twitter, notably the trust and safety guy, Yoel Roth, notably the Asian Indian legal consigliere, Vijay Aghade, notably the FBI guy at Twitter, James Baker. All of them were hauled before the House GOP and subjected to withering questioning that was, quite honestly, a real treat to watch. If you want highlights, go to my Twitter feed and you'll see James Comer, you'll see Nancy Mace, you'll see Marjorie Taylor Greene, Lauren Boebert, all of them doing a really good job putting these guys up against the wall, nailing them with their own words and actions, and making them squirm and hem and haw and try to dodge. And then we got a culmination that I want to tell you about. The Hunter Biden story was an important theme, and the questioning was really telling because it exposed the fact that even though Twitter came to the conclusion that this was, quote, hacked, it was somehow a Russian hack, there was no basis for this. I love the questions to Yoel Roth. Who did you consult that told you that this was a Russian hack?
I don't know. I didn't really talk to anybody. I just read some internal Twitter communications to that effect.
I'm paraphrasing, of course, but this is the Yoel Roth twittering on about. And what became really clear is how irresponsible these people are. Nancy Mace, who, by the way, has been on the podcast and did a great job, she focused on COVID. She's like, hey, Vijay Aghade, you've been censoring prominent doctors, epidemiologists at Harvard and Stanford. Did you go to medical school?
No, I didn't.
Okay, so you're not a doctor. What gives you the competence to decide that these doctors are spreading misinformation?
Well, I consulted the Twitter guidelines to come to that conclusion.
So this is Vijay Aghade. And you, again, see that these people have no qualifications. They are just in these positions of power, and they are lording it over the American public policy discourse. And Byron Donalds, a Florida congressman, did an excellent job. Basically, again, were you getting information and tip-offs from the Biden team about who to censor? You know, here's Yoel Roth.
No, I've not been in any contact with the Biden team at all.
Oh, really? Well, let's look at these emails where it talks about the Biden team internal emails. This is from the Twitter files. Thank God for the Twitter files. Basically saying, requests have come in from the Biden team. And another guy reports right below that, handled. Handled, of course, here meaning we've taken care of it. We've banned all those guys. We've shadow banned them. We've done whatever we need to do to reduce their or shut down their reach. Marjorie Taylor Greene was on complete fire. She went into the issue of child porn. Hey, you old rot, how come you aren't taking all the child porn down? Didn't you write a thesis where you said it's kind of that you advocated for underage boys to have access to adult-only apps like Grindr and so on? In other words, and the question I was waiting for, which she held back on this one, but I wouldn't have. Okay, you old rot, are you a pedophile? If not, are you an advocate for pedophilia? What are your views on the subject? This is the way to push it, not to back off and out of courtesy or discretion or, the children are watching. No, these people need to be held fully to account. Lauren Boebert was also aflame because, remember, Twitter had essentially banned her for 90 days at a critical period, by the way, in the election cycle, and done it because all she did was tweet out something from Hillary Clinton and said something like, this is freaking crazy. And so an accurate tweet, nothing in it that is, quote, hateful or certainly didn't use the N-word. And yet, again, this Twitter team just decided, we don't really like Lauren Boebert. Let's just throw her off the platform for 3 months. And so this arbitrary exercise of power. And finally, here comes Representative Clay Higgins, who kind of brings it all home. And he says to these guys, and I'm not quoting him here. I have the quotes, but I don't need to read them. He says, in effect, listen, guys, you know, you guys don't look all that comfortable to me, and you shouldn't. Look like you're under stress, and you should be. But it's only the beginning, because this is only, he says, the investigation stage. The arrest stage is still to come. Your lawyers kind of know all about that, but that involves handcuffs. It involves people taking you out of your house. It involves depositions. And he goes, I'm looking forward myself to doing 5 hours of depositions with you guys. So there was the Republicans here doing what Republicans need to do. And that is to take this information that's out there, that's being ignored, suppressed by the mainstream media, no problem. In an age of social media, we don't really care if New York Times doesn't cover it, Washington Post doesn't cover it. Remember, the Washington Post, what, 3 million subscribers, the New York Times, 7 million. But Twitter, what, 80, 90, 200 million people? We're talking about giant numbers. We have plenty of ability in today's environment, as long as it's an uncensored environment, to get this information widely out to the American people. And I'm delighted to see it starting to happen. Well, just when you thought it couldn't get any better, Mike Lindell and MyPillow are launching the MyPillow 2.0. When Mike invented MyPillow, it had everything you could want in a pillow. But now, nearly 20 years later, Mike has discovered a new technology that makes MyPillow even better. The MyPillow 2.0 has the patented adjustable fill of the original MyPillow. And now, with the brand new fabric that is made with a temperature-regulating thread, the MyPillow 2.0 is the softest, smoothest, and coolest pillow you'll ever own. Say goodbye to tossing and turning and flipping your pillow over in the middle of the night. And more great news on MyPillow 2.0, buy one, get one free offer with promo code Dinesh. MyPillow 2.0 is machine washable and dryable. MyPillow 2.0 is made in the USA and comes with a 10-year warranty and a 60-day money-back guarantee. Go ahead, call 800-876-0227. That number, 800-876-0227, or go to MyPillow.com. Don't forget to use the promo code D-I-N-E-S-H, Dinesh. I've been reflecting on Biden's State of the Union, reflecting on the polarized environment that we're in, reflecting on how partisan the address is. Very different from States of the Union in the past, where, of course, there was a partisan element to them, but there was also a lot of appeal to common ground. Now, in Biden's case, there was a kind of effort to force the Republicans to clap or to try to make statements that would make Republicans feel uncomfortable about not clapping. Insulin prices are down. Pause. But these are political scoring points in which you're supposed to clap, not really because you want to, because you don't necessarily approve of the trade-offs that have made this decision possible, but because it seems like you're churlish or you're somehow a mean person if you don't clap when Biden is reciting so-called good news. Inflation is down. Well, normally I would tepidly applaud because it's down only a little bit. But then I have to remember that Biden is chronically lying about it. He said that the inflation was there when he got here. Was inflation was 1.4%. It went up to, what, 8 or 9%. It's now in the sixes. So it is down from Biden's own previous high. So all of that is going through my mind. I'm thinking to myself, I'm not going to clap for this kind of demagoguery. And to the Republicans' credit, most of them did not. Now, Sarah Huckabee Sanders steps forward to do the rebuttal to Biden's address. And she was, I think, a good choice because she's a young woman in her 40s. She's the first female governor of Arkansas. And she got off some really good lines about the fact that she, first of all, she knows that she's a woman, and she's not part of the kind of woke ideology that denies the distinction between male and female. She had some, what I would call, standard boilerplate. She says Biden is, quote, unfit to serve as the commander-in-chief. His, quote, weakness puts our nation and the world at risk. But what really caught my attention was this statement: the dividing line in America is no longer between right and left. It's between normal and crazy. And here I think she's getting more to the heart of the matter. The Democrats have erected a certain set of false idols. And some of these idols are downright disgusting, some of them perverse, some of them virtually satanic. Look at the recent performance at the Grammys. And they want us to worship their idols. And basically, Sarah Huckabee Sanders says, we're not going to. And I think this is now, this resolve is settling in into the Republican and conservative side of the aisle. We're just not going to do it. Sarah Huckabee Sanders also pointed out that it's time for a new generation of leadership in America. I mean, think of these old geezers like Biden. Now, of course, Pelosi has happily moved to the side. But she also said, and I commend her for saying this, quote, it's time for a new generation of Republican leadership. And I can see here a guy like McConnell squirming. Again, not that McConnell doesn't have some good qualities, not that he doesn't do certain things well, but at some point, you don't want to continue to be a power-hungry maniac. You've got to realize, my time has come. It's time to spend some time with the grandchildren. Now, Sarah Huckabee Sanders has been tough in her own state. In fact, I heard she signed an executive order essentially prohibiting indoctrination in the public schools in Arkansas and also banning the use of the term Latinx, L-A-T-I-N-X, in official state documents. This, as you know, is hardly anti-Hispanic or anti-minority. The vast majority of Hispanics do not want to be called Latinx. It's essentially a kind of LGBTQ attempt to rename the entire Hispanic community to remove the sort of gendered aspect of it. Most Americans, says Sarah Sanders, simply want to live their lives in freedom and peace, but we are under attack in a left-wing culture war we didn't start and never wanted to fight. Now, this is true, but I would add, but we are quite determined to fight, and we're going to get better at fighting this war that we didn't start. It's somewhat similar if you think about it. I'm obviously mean the analogy in a non-military sense, but think about World War II. The United States didn't want to get into it. We were kind of dragged into it. We were slow to get involved. It wasn't until Pearl Harbor that we even got in the war. But once we got in the war, we're like, okay, now it's time to really fight. You started it, but we know how to finish it, and we're going to do what's necessary to do that. I think we've got to have the same kind of tough-minded resolve, a little bit of that fiber of the so-called greatest generation. And so kudos to Sarah Huckabee Sanders. I think that between the House GOP, Sarah Sanders, we're seeing a new mood emerging on the right of center. Now, the left is a little horrified by this, and I see on social media they keep acting like conservatives gone wild, conservatives are misbehaving, this is MAGA. Yeah, this is MAGA. Get used to it, because we finally learned that the way to fight you, the left, is to be a little bit more like you. Thanks to the support of people like you, Patriot Mobile has emerged as one of the leaders in the parallel economy. And they have big news. Patriot Mobile now offers service with all three major networks. This means if you're with the big three and like the service, but don't like the values, you can still access the service with Patriot Mobile. They also offer a performance guarantee. If you're not happy with your coverage, you can switch between the three major carriers for free. Patriot Mobile is America's only Christian conservative wireless provider, offering nationwide coverage on the best 4G and 5G networks, so you get the same great service while supporting a company that fights to protect our God-given rights and freedoms. This new year, resolve to stop supporting companies that don't align with your values. Patriot Mobile's 100% U.S.-based customer service team makes switching easy. Just go to patriotmobile.com/Dinesh or call them at 878-PATRIOT. Get free activation today with the offer code Dinesh. That's patriotmobile, MOBILE.com/Dinesh or call 878-PATRIOT. I'd like to talk about Julie Kelly's latest article on things we didn't know about January 6th that the January 6th committee has tried to conceal, to downplay, in some cases to mention, but like stick it in an appendix where no one's really going to focus on it. We got a hint of all that when Tim Heafy, the chief investigator for January 6th, came out and told Ken Delanian of NBC News that, oh yeah, there was plenty of intelligence about what was going to happen in January 6th. There was a lot of concrete and practical knowledge that the law enforcement authorities had, but they didn't act on it. They didn't coordinate one with the other. They didn't prepare for this. Now, why they didn't prepare for this, he doesn't go into. But the point is, this law enforcement failure, at the very least, it was a kind of act of coordinated incompetence. Was completely left out of the January 6th committee hearings. They never had hearings where they called law enforcement to account. Why? Because Liz Cheney and the others kind of had a narrative, law enforcement good, Trump and MAGA bad. Any information that disrupted this narrative was simply excluded. So you see here the January 6th committee is not a real investigation. It's not even a real committee because it didn't have Republican members except hand-picked Republicans picked by Pelosi to support the Democratic narrative. By the way, this is a good lesson for Kevin McCarthy. You can do the same thing. To the Democrats. Find one or two Democrats, if you can find them, good luck, who are going to play the game of the Republicans and put them on committees. Now, the FBI in its latest filings in January 6th cases, and I'm thinking here specifically about the Oath Keepers cases, the quote, the government asked this court to require defense counsel to pre-clear any questions regarding FBI or other government informants that counsel intends to ask of any government witness on direct or cross-examination so the court may impose appropriate limitations on such questioning. What's going on here? Basically, the Biden DOJ is trying to keep under wraps, keep from the public eye, and also keep from the jury the involvement, the degree of involvement of the FBI in January 6th. And this, I think, is reprehensible on two counts. First of all, the public has a right to know. And secondly, the defendants have a right to be able to provide information to the court and to the jury about to what degree this event was orchestrated or rigged or perhaps accentuated by the FBI and its team. Very interesting comments that Julie Kelly focuses on. She actually, it's a little bit buried in the article, I'm sorry to say. It should have been up front. But here's Milley, and he talks about the fact that he says, there was general unease and atmospherics being reported back to me and us about unrest potential for violence. So my public affairs guy decided it would be a good idea to go ahead and do a backgrounder with a variety of news anchors to, you know, transmit a message of stability with the United States military. Now, this is extremely strange because the military is not supposed to get involved in domestic affairs. And in fact, General Milley knows this. And he goes, quote, again, this goes back to the military being involved in domestic politics. We have no part in that. Zero. So you have a radical contradiction. On the one hand, the military is supposed to have no part in domestic politics. On the other hand, Milley and his public affairs team are background briefing. Background is another way of saying secretly. Briefing all kinds of media organizations and so on, and discussing January 6th, discussing what the military will and won't do. Milley also confirms very interestingly, quote, there was a series of meetings prior to the 6th, interagency meetings with Acting Defense Secretary Miller, National Security Advisor Robert O'Brien, Acting Attorney General Jeff Rosen, and I'm involved in those meetings as well. This is, again, confirmation that these top-level guys had knowledge, and in fact, they were meeting about it, about what was going to happen or what could happen on January 6th. And so the inaction on the part of law enforcement must be measured against the fact that this wasn't something that took them by surprise. Oh, we were just expecting a normal demonstration. Something got out of control. We were really shocked. No, they anticipated it. They talked about it. They had high-level meetings about it. And yet, they did or didn't do what they did and didn't do. And so Julie Kelly's conclusion was, what the American people don't know about January 6th arguably outweighs what we do know. All the evidence that would tell the full story of that day, surveillance video, FBI files, communication between top officials and agencies, including the military, remains hidden for any number of excuses. And the point to make is that this is not the normal bureaucratic animal trying to cover its tracks. It's not simply a case where we didn't really do a good job. Something you could say, for example, about the aftermath of the reaction to Katrina or some other type of natural disaster. No, here there are nefarious reasons behind all this, nefarious reasons that are being grimly played out in rigged courtrooms around the country with hapless defendants looking at long-term prison sentences for doing little or nothing, or certainly sentences that outweigh what they actually did. The U.S. just blew through the $31.4 trillion debt ceiling in January, and the White House still refuses to reduce spending. Our national leadership has buried, evidently, its heads in the sand when it comes to fiscal responsibility. Well, it's time to pull yours out. Now would be a great time to diversify into gold with Birch Gold. That's why I buy gold. In times of high uncertainty and instability, Debbie and I want something dependable. Birch Gold makes it easy to convert an IRA, a 401k, into an IRA in precious metals. Think about this. To dig our country out of this mountain of debt, every single taxpayer in America would have to write a check for $247,000. Ouch. And it's only getting worse. Protect yourself with gold today by texting Dinesh to 989898. With an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau, thousands of happy customers, countless five-star reviews, Birch Gold is who I trust to protect my future and yours. Text Dinesh to 989898 today. You know, Biden may be a slumbering, semi-comatose man who drifts in and out of reality, but I gotta say, his administration is pretty relentless in advancing on every front the left-wing agenda. And this is a kind of inverse lesson for our side, because when Republicans have the White House, the executive branch, a lot of them just sit tight. A lot of them think, in a sense, we're just going to prevent bad things from happening. Government should have a smaller involvement in people's lives. But since it doesn't, and there's not a whole lot we can immediately do about it, let's just twiddle our thumbs. Well, the left does not twiddle its thumbs. And here's an example of this. The Biden Labor Department has now advanced a new rule. A rule is a kind of enforcement authorization that allows 401k managers of 401k retirement funds and pension funds, to invest in so-called environmental social governance funds, so ESG. Now, what is ESG? ESG is basically the whole climate business, the whole climate issue. And ESG, the principle of ESG says that people who have money, funds, should only invest in companies that make pledges to do right by the climate, to save the planet, to get on board with the UN's climate agenda. And companies that don't do that, companies that won't go along, or especially if you're an energy company that by definition you don't really go along, then you don't get the investments. You don't get the funding. These funds end up either restricting you or boycotting you. And so the Biden administration evidently wants giant 401k pension funds and retirement funds to be able to now put money into these ESG funds. Well, happily, this is a case where the Republicans aren't slumbering over it. In fact, Chris Kobach is on it. This is the Attorney General of Kansas. And he also has on board a whole bunch of other states. 25 states, mostly, if not all Republican, are suing the Biden administration over this rule. Why? Because there is, in fact, a law. It's called the Employee Retirement Income Security Act, also called ERISA. And this was signed into law in 1973. It was actually signed into law by Gerald Ford. And it's a law intended to protect us as citizens. Why? Because it says that 401k managers and pension funds shall invest in the interest, in the financial interest of the people whose money they're investing. In other words, the sole objective of the 401k investor is to earn the highest possible return for the person who has worked hard to put money aside and then put that money in a 401k fund. And so the idea here is that the Biden people want to say to these funds, listen, you don't have to make the financial welfare of the person who put the money into this fund paramount. You're allowed to use ESG criteria. You can reason sort of this way. Even though this may not bring me the highest return, this may not bring the people who put money into the 401k account the highest return, we're saving the planet, and that's a nobler objective. In the long run, what good is it if we're all dead, or what good is it in the long run if our whole climate is destroyed? So we're going to do political activism and social activism with other people's money. And the point made by Chris Kobach and by these Republican states in the lawsuit is, listen, there is a law. You are the enforcement mechanism of the government, the Biden people. Quote, as an agency, you can enact regulations, but your regulations cannot contradict the exact express terms of the law. Boom. This is right. And I think this puts the lawsuit on really strong ground. Essentially, what they're saying is, hey, Biden, if you want to allow 401k funds to invest in all kinds of climate and other ESG projects, change the law. Propose that there's a new law, but you're going to have to get it through the House. Good luck. And through the Senate. Good luck. And then you can sign it and it'll become a law. And then you can make regulations that carry out that law. But there's no such law in the books. And in fact, the opposite. The law that's on the book says that you cannot invest money, 401k money, for any other a purpose or by any other criterion other than pursuing the financial welfare of the people whose money it is. This is Chris Kobach again. It says that when you do all this ESG stuff, by taking a whole bunch of potential investments off the table because they're non-climate compliant, quote, the return on investment for those funds is going to be lower because you're taking investment options off the table. I mean, this just simply follows logically. If you're not allowed to look at all options, but only some options because they fall into the ESG camp, then you're making investment decisions that are not, one would argue, and as seems obvious, in the best financial interest of the American citizens. Debbie and I thought we just had to live with the normal aging aches and pains, but no. We started taking Relief Factor a couple of years ago, and the difference we have seen in our joints has been nothing short of amazing. Aches and pains are basically gone thanks to this 100% drug-free solution called Relief Factor. Relief Factor supports your body's fight against inflammation. That's the source of aches and pains. The vast majority of people who try it love it. They swear by it. They order more because it works for them. Debbie has been able to do the exercises that for a while she wasn't able to do. It's been a real game changer for her, her aunt, other members of our family, guys here in the studio, and many other people. You too can benefit. Try it for yourself. Order the 3-week quick start for the discounted price of just $19.95. Go to relieffactor.com or call 833-690-7246 to find out more. That number again, 833-690-7246, or go to relieffactor.com. Feel the difference. What is going on at Project Veritas? I must say I was a little startled to see this. And at first I thought, is this a rumor? But then I saw it reported a number of different places and it appears not to be a rumor. Quote, breaking, James O'Keefe, founder and CEO of Project Veritas, placed on paid leave by the group's board as they consider removing him from leadership position. Now, I don't know what's going on, and I'm sorely tempted. James O'Keefe is a friend of ours. In fact, he's always inviting us to something or the other. One kind of slightly amusing tidbit is that O'Keefe doesn't have my cell phone, but he has Debbie's cell phone, but he thinks Debbie is me. So he's constantly texting her about this and that, sometimes the latest Project Veritas breaking story and stuff. And initially, Debbie politely told James, hey, James, this is actually Debbie. It's not Dinesh. But James paid no attention. And so Debbie now is essentially morphed into me for the purposes of cell phone communications with James, because it's hopeless to tell him that it's not really Dinesh's phone. In any event, we've had James in one of our movies, an interview with him in Death of a Nation. I think we also featured him briefly in Trump Card. And I was tempted to, like, text him, hey, James, like, what's going on? Is everything okay? But I figured, you know what, if there's some internal turmoil, I know his hands are probably full. He's probably dealing with 40 different things. He's probably having all kinds of meetings and phone calls, donors, and so on. So I don't want to get in the middle of that. I'm going to leave some time, let kind of James work this through. I'd love to also have him at some time come on the podcast, depending on how all this plays out. But here's what we do know. One, without James O'Keefe, we really wouldn't have the Acorn story going back to the Obama days. We wouldn't have Ashley Biden's diary. We wouldn't have all this, all these revelations about COVID mutations for new vaccines. We wouldn't have the all these confessionals about what's happening with woke indoctrination in schools, corruption in the FBI, DOJ. So this whole bunch of big stories that Project Veritas has played a critical role in breaking. And they've shown us, you know, in a way the Twitter files does this too. But until the Twitter files, we only had Project Veritas, where you get people in an environment where they talk freely about what's going on. And it's a whole different thing than what their public statements are, what their public face is. I guess you could, when you call somebody two-faced, this is what you mean. They have one face that is their thespian actor face for the public, another face that is their true personality or their true identity. And that is true of institutions. It's true of government. James O'Keefe knows this, but the value of Project Veritas is it documents it with chapter and verse. So it's an organization, and it's an organization that really depends on James. I mean, who else is going to go and confront these guys who are caught on tape and go, hey, I'm James O'Keefe from Project Veritas? That's almost become a sort of trope on social media. Are you saying you can just swap out James O'Keefe for some other dude or some other gal who's going to do it? This seems to me naive and stupid. And so I think to myself, what is the board thinking? Is it really possible to get rid of James O'Keefe? And, you know, I know how institutions are. I mean, it could be, and I've seen some of this in the reporting on this. Well, James O'Keefe is irascible. You know, James O'Keefe is ADHD. James O'Keefe gets angry and fires people without good cause. Well, let's say all of this is true. I'm not saying it's true. I'm saying let's concede that it's true for the purposes of argument. you still have to recognize that you've got a face of the organization, a kind of prime mover of the organization. And if you remove the prime mover, the organization kind of collapses. There's nothing really left without the front guy, the guy who's defining the organization. And so if it is the case that James O'Keefe is not the best manager in the world, he's not the best administrator. I mean, I've had jobs where I ran a college between 2010, 2012. And I told him in my interview, I said, listen, I don't want to be discussing and sitting down and negotiating the lease for the Empire State Building. I want to talk about the renewal of faculty contracts and what the terms are. And they're like, no, Dinesh, you basically run the college. You make all the big decisions and we will appoint an administrator under you who will essentially make sure all the trains run on time, will organize all that kind of bureaucratic stuff that you don't want to do. And in fact, is not your strength. It's not why we're hiring you. So the same here, if it is the case that what James O'Keefe really needs is a kind of partner or a kind of a sort of president of the organization, and O'Keefe becomes the chairman or the CEO, that's the guy who administratively runs things. And again, this is not a new formula. Daily Wire runs this way. Other organizations run this way. You've got one guy who's sort of the visionary, and then you've got another guy who's the administrator. Let's think about the original Microsoft. Bill Gates was the visionary and the software guy, and Steve Ballmer, his partner, and former Harvard roommate, as I understand it, Ballmer was the guy who actually made the trains run on time. So I think that there is a solution here for Project Veritas. And I really hope that the board comes to its senses and they work something out that makes sense. Why? Because we really need James O'Keefe and we really need Project Veritas. It's time for a fresh start. Now, the phrase literally means an opportunity to begin something again. You know you need a fresh start in your eating habits, right? How many times last year did you say to yourself, I need to start eating better? Well, eating the right amount of fruits and veggies every single day? Almost impossible. I have a much easier, more convenient way for you to make that fresh start with Balance of Nature. Now, Balance of Nature is sourced from 31 whole fruits and vegetables. You get maximum nutrition with their star product, fruits and veggies in a capsule. Debbie and I take them every day. You should do so also. And right now, take advantage of Balance of Nature's New Year's offer. Get $25 off plus free fiber and spice with your first preferred order of fruits and veggies when you use discount code America. The offer can end at any time, so act now. Call 800-246-8751. That's 800-246-8751, or go to balanceofnature.com and use discount code America. I talked yesterday about a very interesting interview that was done by a fellow named Gladden Papin, reported on a Substack, Post-Liberal Order Substack, and an interview with the Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban. And in yesterday's segment, I focused on Orban's, I thought, quite cogent and trenchant critique of the war in Ukraine, his point being that we need to have a well-thought-out end game. This cannot be simply a matter of either we do nothing, isolationism, or we demand a total surrender and victory from the Russians, which is quite likely not going to happen and requires an escalation on our side that puts really the whole world in danger. Let's remember, Russia is a heavily nuclear-tipped power. But in the second part of the interview, there's a sort of a pivot, and Orban now begins to talk about something different, which is the tension between Hungary and the rest of Europe. A tension, as it turns out, that focuses on core values. In fact, Orban goes on to say that we disagree now on our most fundamental values. He goes, quote, the real problem with Hungary in mainstream Europe. And I think he's being very clever here by using the term mainstream Europe. He really means France and Germany, which define and dominate the EU. But of course, there are other holdout countries like Poland, and also now under Giorgia Meloni, Italy, that are forming a sort of rival alliance inside of the EU. And I'll come back to that. But Orban makes the point that the reason mainstream Europe is so uncomfortable with Hungary is that Hungary is actually a flourishing, normal, and quite successful society. First of all, it's a society with a strong sense of national identity. Hungarians are really proud of being Hungarian. By the way, this is just as true of the Poles and just as true of the Italians. And number two, there's a sense of cohesion in the society. Now, the French, I would say, are proud of themselves. They think they're amazing. They think their language is amazing, the best language ever invented, and so on. But the French would not say that their society is defined by national cohesion. In fact, it's a fractured society. And even societies in Europe that have had a reputation for being very peaceable and quite homogeneous and harmonious, like Sweden and Norway, those societies now are openly admitting that there's a lot of fractured elements in the society, and a lot of it is over this over issues of immigration, multiculturalism, people from all over the world turning up in Sweden and now engaging in child marriage, all kinds of brutal types of crime that were very rare, not non-existent, but rare. Are now quite common. And so Orban goes, that's okay. It's true that different countries can kind of pick their own path and cooperate on certain things. But he says, you do have a kind of left-wing, radically secular, globalist, and multicultural alliance that dominates the EU, but a conservative sort of right-of-center alternative is now clearly emerging. And this alternative is defined by the current regimes, the current governments in Italy, in Hungary, and also in Poland. And there's a degree of sympathy for this also elsewhere. And by the way, of course, you've got people in France who are conservative, who don't like what's happening to France. In Sweden, we've seen the rise of a party called the Sweden Democrats. They would be much more comfortable with the Orban view of things than they are with the way Sweden's been going lately. So Hungary, says Orban, is based upon the idea that we have a shared national identity, we have a shared culture, we have certain basic beliefs and values about the world. He says we want to maintain our identity. We don't want to become either the United States or the United States of Europe. We don't want to subsume our identity in some larger amorphous European identity. And interestingly, when issues like Christianity were brought up, Orban was a little cautious. He goes, well, there has been a decline in Christianity, even in Hungary. He says, but we are taking it seriously. We're trying to understand where it's happened, why it's happened, can it be reversed? What would be prudent ways to reverse it? He talks about, for example, the fact that there is a strong support system in Hungary for church-run schools. They seem to have a little different view about whether the government can fund churches. By the way, in other countries in Europe as well, governments do fund church-run organizations. And so church-run schools and other types of church-run institutions, including hospitals, are all on the upswing. Now, on the left here, there's an attempt to portray Orban as some kind of an autocrat. He's not really a democrat. And I guess the fact that Orban has been in power for now two decades is used against him. His very popularity, the very fact that he seems to be a dominant figure in Hungarian politics, well, he must be an autocrat. How's it he's staying in power? Well, one way you stay in power for a long time is you maintain your popularity. You maintain your democratic association with your own citizens. They like the way things are going. Look at Netanyahu in Israel. He is a very long reigning prime minister. Now, admittedly, he was recently displaced, but now he's back in power. I'm happy to say. And so I think that these remarks by Orban are interesting because they show that in Europe, there is a genuine restlessness with the current trajectory of the European Union, and also the way things have been going in places like France and Germany and Sweden. And Orban is trying to chart a different and a rival path. We live in a universe that is remarkably fine-tuned. for life, and specifically for living creatures like us. Now, this itself is highly remarkable. It's like saying that if you want a certain type of music, you need to have a certain type of instrument. The music produced by a piano differs from a music produced by, say, a violin. And so God made the universe this way in order to have, at the end of the process, creatures emerge like us. Now, this is a real problem for people who deny the existence of God. If you want to deny the fine tuner, then you have to come up with some other explanation for the fine-tuned universe. How do you get a fine-tuned violin without a violin guy who made it that way? Well, the scientists have come up with an ingenious alternative, and that is the idea of multiple universes. So not one universe, but many. Now, the interesting thing about multiple universes is that if these universes do exist, and we'll come to the question of how would we know if they do, if these universes do exist, they would have different laws than the laws of this universe. Now, why is that? It's for the obvious reason that the laws of our universe describe the objects and relationships between the objects inside of our universe. The laws that we talk about as the laws of nature are the property of our universe. So we have, for example, Newton's inverse square law. But if there's another universe, it wouldn't have Newton's inverse square law. It could well have an inverse cube law or some other kind of law. So in fact, some scientists believe that under conditions of true infinity, in other words, there are so many universes, a virtual infinity of them. And if that is the case, a big if, you would expect every physical condition, every possible arrangement of matter and energy to be realized. In other words, to put it somewhat crudely, everything that can happen would happen. Now, in this remarkable situation, the scientists say, we can now, in this scenario, in this imagined constellation of universes, we can now kind of explain how we got our universe. As there are an infinite number of universes, it's possible that one particular universe turned up that has the particular arrangement that ours does, and a universe that happens to be fine-tuned for life, but there's an infinite number of other universes out there that are not fine-tuned for life, that have other arrangements, and if they have any other kind of creatures in them, they're radically, unimaginably different from what we are like. Now, there are many versions of this so-called multiple universe theory. I'm not going to go into this in detail. Even though it makes for fascinating reading if you have a kind of layman's interest in this kind of thing. One is the idea of a sort of an oscillating universe that goes through an infinite number of cycles, big bangs followed by so-called big crunches. Another one is called the parallel worlds theory, the idea that you've got all these worlds that exist kind of parallel to each other. But notice one of the features of parallel lines, they never meet. And so if you have these universes, they would not be in any contact with each other. And in fact, they couldn't be. Why? Because the laws that cover them, that describe them, are not the same. They're different types of laws. Now, all of this is kind of interesting. It's very imaginative. It's clearly permeated, made its way into popular culture. There are now so many Netflix specials and movies about alternative universes and certain forms of time travel, or some in which supposedly time operates in a different kind of dimension. But like with all scientific theories, we've got to step back for a moment and go, what is one piece of empirical evidence that you can point to that suggests that there is even one other universe? Forget about multiple universes. Forget about an infinity of universes. Show me the empirical proof or even an empirical suggestion that there are universes, even one, other than our own. And in fact, the scientists, the best scientists, admit that there is no such empirical evidence. Here is Steven Weinberg, a Nobel laureate in physics. These are very speculative ideas without any, I emphasize, any empirical support. Here is a physicist, Lee Smolin of Princeton. He calls the idea of multiple universes, quote, a fantasy. He calls it, quote, possibly false clues that only seem to have something to do with each other. There is every chance that these ideas will not succeed. And so you have scientists at the outset admitting that the idea of multiple universes doesn't really exist in empirical reality. It seems to exist only in the mind.
Subscribe to the Dinesh D'Souza podcast on Apple, Google, and Spotify. Or watch on Rumble, YouTube, and SalemNow.com.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.